Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You're listening to Griefcast with me, Carrie Adloyd. How do we grieve for someone? How does it change and evolve as we get older? My dad died when I was 15, and it took me many, many years to be able to express what I had gone through. So I decided to create Griefcast, a chance to talk, share, and laugh about the weirdness of grief and death. But with comedians, so it's not that depressing, I promise. Each time I talk to a different comedian about their own personal experience of grief as we remember someone that they have lost along the way. Whether it was a long time ago or you've just joined the club, this is a chance to talk about the peculiar human process of death. Welcome to Griefcast.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey Griefsters, I hope you're doing okay and you have not melted into a pool of sweat and regrets if you're listening in England, because it is so hot. It is so hot. Every single conversation begins with the words, "It's so hot." And I think that's fine, because it is so hot and needs saying. Just remember, it will get cold again one day. See, memories can be therapist can be helpful sometimes. Thank you for listening. As ever, if you have been enjoying the show, please do rate and review it on iTunes, wherever else you can do your rating and your reviewing. I think it's just iTunes. I know everybody asks you to do that, but it is because it genuinely helps other people find the show. And also with this show, it's quite nice that people can go, oh, it's not as depressing as it sounds. It's actually quite cheery. And do subscribe as well, so you don't ever miss an episode of said cheery chats about death. Just to remind you as well, we have a live show coming up at the London Podcast Festival on the 15th of September, where I will be joined by No Such Thing as a Fish host and QI elf Andrew Hunter-Murray and Throwing Shade and Feminasty author Erin Gibson. Tickets are available now, so head to the King's Place website for more details. This week I'm talking to stand-up comedian Susie Ruffle. Susie is a brilliant comedian who had an amazing Edinburgh last year with her show Common. Since then she's been on Mock the Week, Comedy Central at the Comedy Store, and as she will hear in this episode, she's just released her own stand-up special on the BBC iPlayer. Do check it out, it's just absolutely brilliant, really, really funny. Susie came in to talk to me about her nan, who died in 2017.
Welcome to Griefcast. I'm here today with stand-up comedian Susie Ruffle.
Hello.
Hello. I saw some very exciting news on your Instagram today.
I've got a cat, you're right. And she's beautiful.
You are worth following for the cat alone.
Such a good cat.
You've got a BBC comedy special.
I do. I have a stand-up special that came out. That came out this morning. It's on iPlayer.
It came out this morning?
Yeah.
That's so exciting, Susie.
Yeah. So it's on the iPlayer and it goes on BBC Worldwide and then it's got a late night repeat on BBC One.
Wow.
Yeah, which is really cool.
My God, your own stand-up on BBC One. That's amazing.
Yeah. 11 o'clock, August 1st.
I feel like it's a good time for stand-up. Like, obviously, I'm not a stand-up, but I've always loved watching it. And I feel like there's so much, like, I feel I can access a lot more stand-up than I used to.
Yeah, I guess so. It's quite an exciting time. I think it's because there's so many brilliant people.
Yeah.
And there's so many brilliant women, which I think makes it really exciting.
That is incredibly exciting.
Which I just love.
But there's also this feel like, I don't know, and I know people like, obviously watching live comedy is really important, but like, say you have a kid.
Totally,
like,
yeah.
Having access to Netflix and iPlayer, and I've just been like eating my way through comedy specials.
And it's the same
so
for like...
nice.
It's different, but I think if you're like slightly more sort of, if you're not in like a big city or if you don't live somewhere, and certainly like with my stand-up, part of the reason that I'm really excited about it going out is that I think there's probably quite a lot of queer people who might not get out to comedy or might not live somewhere where there is comedy and be like, oh, here's someone that's got a life that's a bit like mine.
Or even the life that I want to have.
Yeah, totally. Or if they're like young and they don't know and they don't have, they haven't found like their little tribe yet.
That's the amazing power of the internet.
It is, yeah. I mean, there's bad things too, sure. But I think maybe my comedy special...
is going to change the world.
Hey, listen, I'm not saying the world, but maybe three or four lesbians in the Lake District. And if that happens, I'll be a very happy lady.
This is a shout out to Penny, Jessica.
And the two Sharons.
And the two Sharons. In the Lake District.
In the Lake District.
Susie's here for you.
Guys.
Follow her on Instagram. Slide her a DM.
The cat. Slid into the deems.
And then maybe offer her a cottage to stay in, and then that's going to work.
Lovely.
But,
ideal.
Like, don't come round too much when she's in the cottage.
No, that might be weird. That's if you've got homemade jam, sure, I'm in.
Oh, my God, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. No, it's just for, I guess, because when I was younger, I used to, you know, I think we're similar age. I'm older, I think. And you'd have to, like...
I mean, like a couple of years. I think we're fine.
You can tell, the couple of wrinkles.
I mean, I think that's a child.
That is the child. That's definitely a child. But, like, scouring our four channels, and I remember catching Dylan Moran doing stand-up on Channel 4 and being like, what's this? And Lee Evans as well. And being like, oh my God. And you'd be like, right, don't move because it's on now. I can't do anything. This is comedy. And then you'd watch it and like two other people watched it at school or something. And that was so exciting.
I remember watching Live from the Comedy Store and Ed Byrne was on it. And he had that routine about Alanis Morissette and how it's not ironic.
Yes,
it's just bad luck.
That.
I remember watching it with my dad and me and my dad really laughing and me having this moment of being like, oh, comedy really connects people. Like, comedy really... Me and my dad, like, I'm a grown-up. I'm laughing with my dad about the same thing.
Oh, my God. That ironic routine was really good, wasn't
it? Yeah, really good.
I felt it was, like, the first time someone had pointed out something about, like, a song, like, that I knew. Yeah, it is stupid.
I love her. I'm seeing her on Saturday. Very excited.
What?
Yeah, she's playing a comedy... she's not playing a comedy festival. She's playing a music festival that I'm doing comedy at.
She's doing a tight 10.
She's doing a tight 10, and it's not ironic.
Oh, amazing.
Can't wait.
So, You are an amazing comedian, very successful stand-up and brilliant stand-up.
Oh, so nice.
But who are we remembering today?
We're going to talk about my nan.
Your nan. Can I say straight away, I love a nan. I didn't have a nan. I had a grandmother.
Right.
So I got jealous of people who had nans.
Yeah, my nan didn't want to be called granny because it made her feel old.
I'm already in love.
She was nearly 95 when she died, still didn't want to be granny.
So what was her name?
Her name was Joan Wells.
Joan Wells, that's very glamorous.
She was amazing. Yeah. It was Joan Elmer. That was her name before she was married. And she was born in 1921.
Wow.
In Portsmouth, where I grew up.
Oh, my God. So were you very close to her growing up?
Yeah, always. So my grandfather died when I was about 7, and I had a very normal response to it. What happened is my granddad died, Grampy, and the night that he died, I was staying around Katie Barrow's house, because you know how people that you went to school with always have surnames.
Surnames, yeah.
I was staying around Katie Barrow's house, and I just decided that the reason that my grandson had died was because I was staying out of the house.
Sure, because you're 7, nothing makes sense, so you decide, here's my logic.
Yeah.
I'm with you, I did the
same thing. Then I wouldn't sleep in a house that my mum wasn't in for 8 years.
Great.
Normal response. Very normal response. Very normal. Sort of like 14 years old, had to leave the sleepovers and all that sort of thing.
Oh, Susan.
And my nan, we were always super close to my nan and my gramps, but I think when my gramps died, nan started coming around for dinner. Like all the time, like a few times a week. She'd come over for Sunday lunch. And I developed a really close relationship with her from really early on. I was always really, I don't know, I'm sure a lot of people feel like this, but I sort of felt like there was like a special connection between us. And her house was right near my school. And so often I'd pop round, like when I was sort of early teenager, I'd pop round to her little flat.
It just sounds so nice.
It was lovely. She was amazing. She was really lovely.
I think there's an underappreciation of, this is a really big sentence, it doesn't need to be, but there's an underappreciation of people who occur in your life daily and add to the normalcy and how important that is. So if a grandparent comes around for dinner, they become so much more part of the family than someone who, like, you see once every 6 months and it's quite formal and,
Totally. Yeah, she was just like, you know, like another parent in a way. She was, like, you know, really often there. And she was great. She had, like, stories about the war. It's brilliant.
What happened to her in the war? Was she, like...
So Portsmouth was really heavily bombed.
Yeah.
My grandfather was in the... So he was in a thing called the 698 Boys, which was a engineering part of the army. Basically, they needed loads of builders to blow up things.
Wow.
So basically, the British troops would get across, and before the Germans got across, they would have to, like, blow up the bridges or, like, you know, so they didn't know which way we were going. So he was in the North African campaign, and he was all over the world, and spent a lot of time in France, was in Dunkirk. And swam and just got into a fishing boat.
Wow.
And they wrote to each other, but he could never say where he was.
Oh my
God. So he'd be like, I'm in France, just like really vague.
Yeah.
And so she still had all of his letters.
Wow.
And like these little cards with his photograph on that said, like, love you always, love Jack.
Oh.
And
Jack and Joan.
Jack and Joan. Oh. Yeah, I know. And so they were, and I think I think we live in a time at the moment. This again, a huge sweeping generalisation, but we're also like obsessed with like, I don't know, like people. I'm not, but people are so obsessed with like the Kardashians or with people that have everything, and with this idea of like extreme wealth being everything and extreme beauty being everything. And they sort of had quite a simple life. And I think once he got back from the war, he was away for 6 years,
wow.
And they got married during that time. He absconded for a day. Got back to his, went to see my nan when he was in the UK. He just like jumped over the barrack wall.
Oh my God.
And went and saw my nan because my nan had tonsillitis. Oh. And went and saw her. And then he went back and he got court-martialed and they said, where have you been, Jack? And he was called John, but you know how people in the olden days just change their name.
Just change your name for the hell of it.
So, John Wells, where have you been? And he said, I went to see my girlfriend, she's got tonsillitis. And he said, well, I don't know what to do with you. And he said, will you give me a day off so I can marry her? And they did.
Oh.
And then they got married. So he got so he got married in his uniform. And they just had a day. And they had sandwiches. My great-grandmother owned a pub. So they went and got married in the church down the road. Then had sandwiches in the pub. And then he had to go back.
Wow.
And
it's unimaginable to us, our generation, isn't it, that that would happen?
Yeah, like just a really small wedding.
Like if we had a friend who was like, oh yeah, they got married in the day and then he's gone back, like, you'd be like, what?
Yeah.
That's insane.
And then they wrote to each other for 6 years.
Wow.
And just hoped for a time when...
He'd come back.
And, like, you know, Portsmouth's really heavily bombed. A lot of people were killed because it's a naval port.
Yeah.
And so, like, there was an air raid shelter in my great-grandmother's pub. So they would just try and fit as many people as possible. So when the woo, woo, woo went off, everyone would just run to my great-grandmother's pub and hide. And sometimes they would come out and, like, half the street would be gone. And they'd be like, oh, did you hear about Commercial Road? They've lost 5 shops.
Wow.
And it was just became very normal for people to... I think losing people became...
Yeah. Well, death was so much more present.
Yeah, like, I think so.
So much more present.
And I think they felt like super lucky that, you know, like, none of my grandparents' siblings died during the war. One of them lost an eye. And he would then take out his false eye and put it on the mantelpiece and say, keeping an eye on you while we went for a wee while we were kids, which was equal parts hilarious, terrifying.
But if you've got a glass eye and you're not doing that joke, what's wrong with it?
Yeah, like, Ryan, come on, guys.
Come on, that's...
Up your game.
It's calling for it. Wow, so they were lucky in a way. Like,
yeah, and I think they would... And then they had a very normal life. He was a builder. She worked in a corset factory.
Wow.
And that was their lives. They had 3 children. They felt like they were very lucky because they had 3 healthy girls. And they had a very normal life that, I guess, by some standards, people would be like, oh, well, it's boring. But it was not. It was lovely and it was theirs. And they, you know, spent their whole life trying to own their house. And eventually they did. And it was a little too up, too down. And
but it's like you said, because I think we forget the joy of normalcy. And when you're a kid and, like, your nan comes around all the time, there's a real joy in that I think as adults it's easy to forget of, like, oh, well, you know, what kids need excitement, or we should do this, or what are we aiming for all the time, rather than, like, the memories. Like, yeah, my grandparents would come around, like, every Sunday.
Mm.
And that's, like, one of my fondest memories is my grandpa coming round and just talking to me.
Oh, yeah, but I've listened to the podcast lots. Your grandpa sounds amazing.
My grandpa was a bit of a character. A bit of a character, yeah. And, like, he was totally my hero. Like, I really did think he'd been all over the world and he had all these stories, and it was just like... Yeah, you know, when you're growing up in the suburbs, it just seems like,
such a better hero.
Yeah.
Someone that's on Instagram...
Yeah.
Posing.
So was your nan your hero?
In many respects, yeah. So she obviously lived out the war. Then she became a widow, but I found that she was very brave, and I always thought she was super stoic.
Yeah.
And she, you know, she would miss my gramps. Of course she would. But she would just get on, and I think that's very much her generation.
Yeah.
That sort of make do, amend, you carry on. I mean, not really linked, but sort of. But, like, I've just recently watched The Crown. And I was really thinking a lot about that sort of generation of, like, just carrying on. Yeah. And the fact that the Queen comes off as, like, sort of quite cold now, you sort of understand it because she comes from an era that is, like,
oh,
so...
God, yeah.
Like, and so my nan had that real stoicism that I loved, and that I felt enormously proud of her. And she dressed really well. She wore, like...
Love a glamorous nun.
Well, yeah, but, like, not even glam. She'd wear, like, a suit.
Oh, my...
Or, like, nice. You know, I wear suits a lot.
Yeah.
And she'd have, like, a nice brooch, maybe some pearls.
Oh, lush. Just lovely.
Like a cameo brooch.
That. Oh, you know those? I'll eat that up. My grandmother, who was quite, interesting, but she was so glamorous.
Really?
That's one of the things that, like, yeah, like, everything... was high quality and matching the jewellery. Like, yeah.
Yeah, like a little twin set.
Yeah, twin set that matched the, you know, the cashmere cardigan and the, like, and she would, like, even up to her 80s, she was getting her hair done and stuff.
Oh, my mum in her 90s, she was, like, having a perm.
And that's one of the worst things, when she went into the home and she was not with it. I mean, she lived to 100 and was really...
Would she have Alzheimer's in the end?
I know.
Don't know.
It was just kind of old. She just sort of, what's the word? Dementia is... Oh, God. She just kind of got old. It wasn't Alzheimer's. She just lost her faculties, really.
Yeah.
And she wasn't as glamorous. And you could see, like, I'd go and see her and I think, oh, she'd be so pissed off that no one's done her hair.
Yeah.
She'd be
so sad.
Pissed off about it. But then, obviously, she was extremely ill and it was like, well, okay, what's happening?
Yeah.
So your nan, how old was she when she died?
She died in the May, and in the July she would have been 95.
Wow.
So she was getting on.
Yeah. And was she in her home?
She was still completely compos mentis. She was in her own home.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was her body that gave up, not her mind.
Oh. So what happened? How did she die?
So about 25 years ago, she had stomach cancer.
Wow.
And she was never she was about maybe like a size 14, 16 all of her life. And then all of a sudden she was a size 8 because they took out, she only had like 20% of her stomach left because it was all cancerous. So, but the doctor got it so quickly that she never had to have chemo.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
So they just took it all out and then she had like quite a long recovery. The very sad thing is that my grandfather nursed her through her illness. As soon as she sort of got the all clear, he had throat cancer, then she nursed him and he passed away. And I think that was part of the reason that she became very... She was always, I think she always dressed very nicely, but she was so aware of how thin she was.
Oh, wow.
She was like, oh, no one can see my clavicles, no one can see my neck. Because I looked, so she would say like, oh, Suze, I look terrible.
Gaunt.
Oh, I look terrible.
Too gaunt.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, oh God, don't look, like, you know, oh, I can't have my arm showing, I can't have this, I can't have that, because she was, you know, she was very frail.
Wow.
No, she wasn't... Frail's the wrong word. She was just very thin.
Yeah, yeah.
And her skin would mark really easily as she got older.
Yeah.
So towards the end, it was sort of a couple of years of us being like, oh God, is this it? And then her being like, no. And then her being completely fine.
Wow.
She only walked with a stick in the last year of her life before that, and completely upright.
Oh my God.
Never bent over. And like all of her, she was one of nine.
Whoa.
And she was the second eldest. Maybe third. She was one of the older ones in the older three, but she only had one sibling left. They'd all passed away, everyone, and she just sort of lived for us and me and my brother and my cousin and her little boy, and her daughters, and we spent an awful lot of time with her, and we would always go to her house, and we would always and she would always come to my mum's, and she would even come up to London until 2 years ago, like well into her 90s, she'd get on the train with mum.
So she saw you doing stand-up?
She never saw me. She saw me online doing stuff.
Oh, okay. What did she think about that?
Yeah, she was like, she sort of loved it.
Yeah.
I think she was a bit like, oh, don't swear. But, which is totally fine. But yeah, she was like, I remember her coming. I've only lived in the place that I live in for 2 years. And I know that she came there because it's up two flights of stairs and there's no elevator. And I was like, walking up with her really slowly, and I went, oh, Nan, this is a really big ask, getting you up these stairs. And she was like, I'm coming to see your flat.
Aww.
I want to see where you live.
Aww.
And then she came up, and I went and got us fish and chips, and we were just sat in my flat and had fish and chips, and then they went back home on the train. But yeah, and I, you know, it was always a huge fear for me coming out to her. She was the last person that I told.
Oh, really?
That I was gay. Yeah, because I was really, you know, it's that thing of like being from a different generation.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, there's a couple of people in the family that are gay, we assume, or that, you know, that have sort of friends that they've lived with, one in particular. And I think we all sort of know he's gay and everyone, but no one talks about it as upfrontly as that.
Right.
But everyone was always fine with it.
Yeah.
And everyone would always be very pleasant to who we assume is his partner.
His friend.
But yeah, I came out when I was 21. And it took me until I was about 28 to tell her.
Wow.
27, 28, yeah.
What do you think you were afraid of?
I was afraid of... I loved her so much. Mm. I was so... Oh, I just loved the bones of her. I just thought she was brilliant, and I always wanted to hear what she had to say, and I really miss not being able to ring her. I used to ring her twice a week, and I really miss that. And I was just really worried that I'd lose that special... I always felt like we had this special thing, and I felt like we both knew it.
Yeah.
And I was really worried that if I told her, she would change how she felt about me, or that she'd think that there was something wrong with it. In the end, my auntie told her, because mine and mum's relationship's always been great, but I think it was, my mum found it very difficult, my nan not knowing, and I think my mum found it harder to sort of process having a gay child because of that, because it felt like a secret. And whenever there's a secret, there's an element of shame.
Yeah, and then I guess she couldn't talk to her mum about it.
Precisely, so and they were very, very close as well. And then eventually my auntie was just like, right, my auntie who I'm enormously close to as well, I'm very lucky, I've got some brilliant people in my family, and just rang my nan and went, right, the reason that Anne, that's my mum's been funny, and the reason that Susie, her and Susie's relationship's a bit weird at the moment is because Susie's gay. Don't be difficult about it. She's already had to deal with it herself. So Nan just rang me and went, "Your auntie Jackie's told me. Don't worry, I love you just as much as I did yesterday." And that was it. That's all we... She's met exes wow. when we were still together. I didn't parade them in once we'd broken up.
And this one is the one who hurt me, Nan.
Yeah. And she was always very warm and lovely to them. One of them, she even said, "You can call me Nan if you want," which wow. was huge for me.
Yeah.
And so I think I was enormously lucky that she was... That she just... I think that she'd seen so much that she was like, "I don't care that you're gay."
Did she talk to you about it again, or was it just like not even worth...
She knew. Yeah, there was nothing like, to talk about, really.
Yeah, yeah.
Once you're out,
yeah, it's done,
for
yeah.
me, yeah. there wasn't really much... Because it was never like, "Oh, am I, aren't I?" It was always like, "Oh, I definitely am this."
Yeah, yeah.
And it was just more everybody else being... Because I'd known since I was like 14.
Wow.
So I'd had a long time to process it, yeah, being 21.
Guys, I'm done.
Yeah, like I know.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And also like I process it stuff on stage, like different yeah. homophobia and stuff. I talk about that very openly on stage. So I didn't, there was nothing really that I needed to talk to her about, just that I knew that she knew and I knew that she still loved me and it didn't matter to her, which was huge
yeah,
for
God.
Me.
And that is incredible for a woman of her generation.
Yeah, it just it was never a thing.
Because it... I don't know if this is true. I'm speaking as an ignorant person here, but I wonder if there seems to be this thing in queer history of people being aware of men being gay.
Yeah.
And the language about that and all, you know, we know what he is. But women being gay seems to be much more like, you know, the famous thing of like
Queen Victoria
claiming they didn't even exist.
Yeah.
So I wonder if that was, if you are that generation, like, would you have even known a woman who was gay? Like,
yeah, I think that's really true. And I think that also... As a gay woman, I think, like, you know, I think a lot of men, you know, went to prison and had sort of terrible, awful times. But I think, unfortunately for a lot of women, they probably just were in very sad marriages.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they didn't have the means to be able to leave where they were from. Yeah. They didn't have the, you know, potentially they didn't, their education finished when they were 15 and they didn't have the opportunity yeah. to do any more. You know, my uncle... sort of moved to London to be my great uncle to move to London to work in menswear, and I think sort of that was his way of getting out of you know, getting away from not our family, not at all that, because I think everyone was always very understanding, or at least I hope they were, but
yeah, a city where it's a little bit more easier to be,
and you're anonymous I think it's a lot of the reason that I really romanticized moving to London, and leaving my nan was one of the hardest things. I moved to London sort of 13 years ago and I would go home all the time. It was to see mum,
yeah,
but you know, my God, now I'm like playing with fate, but like you I always knew that it was limited time with nan,
yeah,
and hopefully with mum it's not that but it's I always knew that I wanted to, like, get as much as I could.
Yeah.
So whenever I would go home, I would sometimes drive to Portsmouth for the day and drive back, which would be, like, 2 hours there, 2 hours back, to spend, like, 4 hours with Nan.
Wow.
Just because I knew that it wasn't going to be forever.
That's interesting to have that self-awareness, though, because some people just don't want to see it.
One of my best friends is an ex-girlfriend of mine who was my first ever girlfriend. So we were together from when we were, like, 21 till I was about 24, and so I'm 32 now. So we've been really good friends for much, much longer than we were a couple. And she said to me, I went to her when Nan died. I went to her house because I didn't know where to go. And she said, I remember when we were together, you waking up in the middle of the night and saying to me, one day Nan's going to die. And, and she said, I've been dreading this for you for more than like 10 years. Because I just think I sort of knew it would completely shift our family to a degree, because she was this matriarch.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
She was this woman that we all went to. And it sort of happened around it was a really awful few months. So it happened last year, so it's still all quite raw.
Yeah, yeah.
But what happened was, so Nan had been on and off ill for a couple of years. And like I say, we had a couple of moments where we all went to the bed and Nan went in hospital. She kept having like kidney problems, which I think is really common in elderly people. And then all of a sudden, boom, she was back. And our sort of GP that's looked after her for about 30 years, probably more, he was the person that spotted her cancer when he was a very young junior doctor.
Wow.
He was like, oh, I'm not sure about this. I'm going to definitely send you for a scan. He was really young and he saved Nan's life. And so we would always go to his GP surgery at Christmas and take him a really expensive bottle of whiskey and be like, thanks for saving Nan. Thanks for spotting it. And he would always call her Wonder Woman. And he was like, oh, she's back, she's fine.
Yeah.
And like they'd do loads of tests and I'd be like, no, she's fine. And so we had that for a couple of years. And And then she sort of slowly started getting worse. And then she went into hospital for sort of quite an extended period. And then she went into this sort of centre for old people that wasn't really a home, but it was a rehabilitation centre to get her back, right, back at walking and stuff, because she was in bed for a couple of months. And being as frail as she was and as little and as skinny as she was and having sort of so little muscle, a couple of months in bed, you know, it really took her a long time to get back to walking. And then during that time when she was in that rehabilitation centre, which would have been around April last year, my auntie, the one that told my nana was gay, that I'm enormously close to, her husband's diagnosed with stomach cancer and died 5 days later.
Oh, my God.
So it was really shocking. My Uncle Brian, who was lovely, who was just a very kind, quiet, lovely, lovely man, who featured heavily in my childhood as sort of the uncle that you'd have that would come around and play with you. He was that one. He was brilliant. And he died really suddenly. So Nan was in hospital the whole time. And so he had these awful stomach pains, kept ignoring them, went to hospital. They said, they opened him up to sort of see if they could take anything out, closed him back up and said, it's everywhere.
Oh my God.
Then it was just like, it's just going to be pain management. And my cousin said, oh, well, what have we got, you know, a few months? And they were like, week, if you're lucky.
Wow.
And so that was it. He was poorly and then he was gone.
God, that's so fast.
And it was so little time for
for anyone to process what has happened.
My aunt and my cousin to process, yeah. And so, and then 3 weeks later, my nan died.
Oh.
So my auntie became a widow and an orphan in a matter of weeks. So it was this really, so like my nan, my auntie sort of ran to my nan, and I was there when she walked in and was like, oh, nan, he's gone, and like, you know, burst into tears. And then like she needed her mum to look after her, but Nan was off.
Oh my God.
And so, you know, she then Nan said to Mum, I want to go home. And my mum said, you can go home, but you know what will happen if you go home. And she said, yeah, I want to die at home. And so then my mum and my auntie took her home. And she was there for about a week, but no one wanted to leave her. So they were just, so my nan had this like little flat that was hotter than the sun. And gorgeous and like just so, and very nan and smell of sultanas because she always baked. So my mum and my auntie stayed there. And then Mum rang me and I was on tour.
Oh, God.
I was touring with Tom Allen, who's one of my best mates, who I toured with last year. We were in Manchester and Nan rang me and said, Suze, I think you're going to have to, if you want to see Nan, I think you're going to have to come home. Because I'd been home a lot to see her.
Yeah.
But she was like, it's happening. And I was meant to be going to MacFest that day. And so I just rang Henry, who's a lovely friend who runs it, and said, I'm really sorry. I think I need to pull out of my show today. And he was like, go home. Why are you ringing me? Don't worry. Yeah. Just go. It's absolutely fine. Don't worry about it. And so I just drove from Manchester down to Portsmouth, which took hours, and got there. And Nan was in her bed and she was still complex mentis. And she went, oh, you're here. And I was like, yeah, I'm here. And then I sort of stayed with her for a few hours and then said to my mum and my auntie Jackie, go home, I'll stay with her for a bit. So I stayed with her and I made her a sandwich and tried to encourage her to eat it and gave her some water and sat on her bed and then said, right, Nan, I'm going to go home. And so I went home. And the next day, Mum and my auntie Jack went back up there, looked after her. And then again, I was like, right, I was filming the next day. And I mean, you mentioned at the top that I've just done my special, but last year it was the first thing I'd ever properly filmed. It was a TV show called Go 8-Bit, which is about gaming.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was filming it the next day with Jonathan Ross, and so I was quite excited to go home and do it. So I was like, okay, I'm going to have to go and spend some time with Nan before I... Because I knew I was going to have to travel back to Portsmouth. Back to London, rather. So I was in her little flat, and I said to my mum and dad, like, go home. Like, I'll stay with Nan and I'll go straight to London, straight from here. And I was like, right, I'll stay here for as late as I can, sort of thing. So I stayed until about 9-ish. And then I said, oh, Nan, I'm filming tomorrow. She said, I know you're filming with Jonathan Ross. You're filming with Jonathan Ross tomorrow.
He's a good Nan person as
well. Yeah.
She knows
Dara
who he is.
Breen's on it. You know, the Irish one. Yeah, I know the Irish one. And so a couple of years before Nan died, for Christmas, I made her a photo album that sort of tracked her life.
Oh.
So I found like the oldest photo I could of her. And it went to Brody, who's my cousin's son.
Oh, wow.
And, like, all of us as kids and all of the holidays we had and all that stuff. And so I got in bed with her and we sort of went through, and she told me the stories I'd heard like 100 times. And then I said, Nan, I've got to go. I'm filming with Jonathan Ross tomorrow. So I know you're filming with Jonathan Ross tomorrow. And I said, okay, well, I'm going to have to go. And then we had this sort of, not awkward, but this moment. And she went, you know I'm off, don't you?
Oh.
And I was like, oh, yeah, I do. And she went, all right then, loves you. And I went, okay, loves you. And then I just got in my car and just cried all the way back to London. And then she passed away while I was filming with Jonathan Ross. And so Mum didn't tell me until she was like, you home? How did it go? I was like, yeah, how's that? And she's like, she's gone. And so, yeah, that was just over a year ago. Oh, so it's still very raw, as you can hear.
Yeah.
But I feel enormously lucky.
Yeah, God. What? I am blown away by everybody's self-awareness. Like, she really knew what was happening. Which that is very... I think that's rare in a case of someone that old.
Yeah.
Because often they are... It's gone to their brain, something's happened to their mind.
So
they don't know what's going on. The fact that she was able to
turn
to you...
She still had a sense of humour.
And so,
which was the amazing thing. So she said... So a few days before she died, she said to my auntie, I can't feel my feet. My auntie went, all right, well, I'll give him a rub. She went, no, I think that means I'm dying. My auntie was like, what? She was like, I think it's today. My auntie was like, I don't think it starts at your feet. And I was like, oh, I don't know. Anyway, then my auntie Jackie went, I'm going to make a cup of tea. So she made a cup of tea, came back in her room and said to my nan, dead yet? My nan went, no, not yet. It was like, there was this weird sort of gallows humour of like, everyone was so aware of it. And I think because my uncle had died just weeks before, and he was, you know, he was 72, which is young considering that my nan was 95.
Yeah, yeah.
And he felt young.
Yeah, so I guess you got those two extremes of like, that's so sudden and out of the blue and everyone's reeling from that. And then this person who's lived such a full, long life.
I mean, she was born like 8 years after the Titanic sank. I mean, it's...
And then to, like, I think... I mean, we talked about this on the show before about, like, good deaths. Like, that sounds like a good death.
I think that...
She was at home. She was at home. Family. People came. She had a week to say goodbye.
Yep. She was very, very calm.
Yeah.
Like, when I was going through the photo album with her, like, I got in bed with her and had a little cuddle with her. And it's like... I don't think many people have that.
No, trust me, someone with a grandmother. No.
Like, I was so lucky to have that and to know that she knew me.
Yeah.
She knew who I really am. She knew that I was gay.
Yeah, you didn't have
that
distant relationship.
Yeah, and that I was out and that she wasn't ashamed of it and she didn't care and...
She really loved you for who...
Yeah, and she was... You know, she didn't really understand stand-up. She was like, lovely that I'm doing it, but she was like, what a weird thing to do.
Which it is.
It is, let's be honest. It really is.
Yeah, it's an
unusual. It's an unusual, it's an unusual calling.
And it's a difficult one to explain to friends when you pop into the high street. That's what I think.
Yeah.
When they say to you,
what are you up to?
What's Susie doing?
Oh, yeah.
It's hard for her to say, she's working in Woolworths.
Like, yeah.
She's doing, how do I say it?
But she was very proud and she would like keep little scraps of me in the local paper and stuff. During this time, I had a breakup.
Oh, God.
So the day after Nan died, my ex and I broke up.
The day after?
Yeah.
Do you think it was affected by that? Do you think that you were in a place of such vulnerability?
I think that it was coming.
Yeah, and so it just kind of went, right.
And I wish that... it was coming and I wish that it didn't happen then because I already had enough to deal with.
Yeah.
But it was just when it happened. And so but then I think that once Nan had died, I was like, well, I can survive her dying. I can survive my heart being broken. My heart's broken in so many ways already.
Yeah.
It's just going to get broken a bit more.
That's and what I think is interesting because it's like when someone dies and you're so close to seeing the truth of what this life is.
Yeah.
That anything that's not truthful suddenly seems really weird.
It's really,
like a relationship that's not working is like, what is this?
Yeah, and you know, it's really changed my... I think losing Nan and really reflecting a lot this year about what is important.
Mm.
It's really changed what I'm like... what I began like looking for in, not even like a partner, but in like my friendships as well. Like I've got a girlfriend now who's amazing. And just like people having like showing extreme kindness
yeah.
has become in my friendship groups and my girlfriend and different people of just being so like I don't know, just that has become like, because my nan was so kind and so nice and so lovely to me, and I mean, she would definitely have opinions about other people that lived in the block and she would love to let you know about them, but yeah, I think it has shifted me
yeah
somewhat. And you really like appreciate things like Jenny Bede, mutual friend of ours. She and I hadn't lived together very long when Nan died. We'd lived together for maybe 6 months and we were friends, but we weren't best mates like we are now.
Yeah.
And just one night I just couldn't stop crying. And so I just went and got in her bed and she was just so, I went into her room and I was like, I don't know what to do. I can't stop crying. She was like, okay, well, do you want to, I'll come and watch telly with you. And you begin to notice things
yeah.
like that I maybe took for granted before
yeah.
or I didn't realise. And I think, you know, feeling that sort of impact of grief in such a huge way just made me, hopefully made me kinder and made me, yeah. And so then we had to do like then the council gave us 5 days to get her out of her flat that she lived in for 25 years.
You're joking.
Which I understand other people needed council flats, but would have loved a week and a bit. So then
5 days?
Yeah. So Nan had
That's
already
not enough time to organise bloody funeral and send the invitations
out. Nan had organised it, mate.
No, shut up.
Of course she did.
She'd got her mate sorted already.
She'd paid for the paper that the stuff was going to be printed on. She'd paid for all of it. Paid for her casket, what kind of casket she wanted, where she wanted it.
Oh my God.
Where she wanted her ashes scattered.
I'm absolutely blown away by this woman. She's fucking
awesome.
Rocks. So has she sorted that before? Like
long before, like
long
10
before.
Years
yeah,
before.
Yeah, yeah. She, yeah, I know this lady. She's like, yeah. Don't want anyone bothering.
Exactly that.
Don't want any fuss.
Yep.
I've sorted it. No, nope,
yep.
Done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All we had to do was choose the songs.
Wow. Why didn't she choose the songs? Was that not fussed?
I don't know.
She wanted perhaps she wanted you guys to have something to do.
Yeah. Which was Pal of My Cradle Days, which is a really old song from like the 20s.
Oh my God.
Which was like one of her favourite songs. My Nan Loved Queen.
Oh my God.
So we had You're My Best Friend.
Classic. Fucking love
Great
that song.
Great song.
Great song.
And Rod Stewart singing A Nightingale Sang in Berkeley Square.
Aww. Nan would have loved them.
Great choice of songs. I did the eulogy.
Oh, wow. How was that? Was it like...
Quite hard.
Hard, but did you get in... Because a lot of performers do eulogies.
Mm,
did you kind of go into that automatic, I do know how to talk?
To a degree, yeah. To a degree. And, I mean, I think the thing is as well is that my nan was quite sure about heaven.
Right.
Didn't go to church, but would say her prayers every night.
So dumb.
Didn't really...
Deal dumb.
I don't think she really liked the organised idea of church. And she didn't... You know, there are a lot of people that go to church that don't live a very sort of kind life.
Yeah,
and I don't know.
Yeah.
I guess my nan would have classed herself to be a Christian, but she would go to bed every night and she would say, I've said my prayers for you. And I think that for my nan, I remember her telling me about the war and about when Gramps came back. He was in France when the war ended. And so he got on a boat and he was working in, Nan was working in a factory at the time. She worked in factories all of her life. And the head of the factory, like, you know, they had announced that the war had ended a couple of days ago, and Gramps was coming back on this boat with loads of men from Portsmouth, and the guy that owned the factory, the manager of the factory, went over, like, called the over the town. I said, anyone whose husband's coming in on this boat, on this ship, they're earlier than we thought, you can leave now and go down to the port. So my nan went down to the port and was like going through in her like overalls from the thing and looking for Gramps, and then they sort of ran to each other and he picked her up and spun around, and my nan always said, oh, we had a Hollywood moment. And I think my nan was so sure that was about to happen.
Yeah,
she was so sure that he was waiting and that her brothers and sisters and her nan, and she kept seeing him in dreams, and that kept confirming it to her, and she was like, I'm just ready to see Gramps. And so I think there was a real, you know.
Yeah, that's why she was so at peace with it.
I think so.
Because she really,
I think so.
she, in her world, was going to see him.
Yeah, I think so.
Who the fuck knows if she did?
Exactly.
Or didn't.
And
we don't
I
know.
Would just sooner think that she did.
Yeah.
But yeah, so she. So then we just like, and then we just had a house, just a lot, just of stuff.
Yeah.
And she wasn't a hoarder or anything.
No,
she was,
it's just life, just a life.
But just light, like soap, like photos, and like so. I would send Nan postcards from wherever I was gigging. So she had postcards from, like, Birmingham. and stuff, like sometimes abroad, but generally Birmingham.
Being in Birmingham.
But not every week, but I mean, once a month I'd send her a postcard. Oh, and she had all of them.
She kept them all.
And that's I've been doing stand-up nearly a decade. That's a decade of like...
But how amazing
are you? I'm in York.
Like, that's so lovely.
I'm in Newcastle. Gig was okay last night, hoping for a better one tonight. Like... And she sent me letters as well.
Aww.
And so I've got all these letters of like, it's really weird actually. I'm not sure really. I'm not Christian. I'm not into organized religion at all. I'm sort of spiritual to a degree. I like to think there's something. I think that maybe thinking that we are it is small-minded. I think there's so much that we don't understand that. And the day after she died, I very morbidly went through all of the letters that she'd ever.
Of course.
Why wouldn't you?
You want to dig that scab a little bit.
Of course.
Get that.
And I found one that was from it was from when I used to live with my friend Rachel, which is about 6 years ago, because in it she said, "How's Rachel?" So I must have been living with Rachel. And I opened it up and a tenner fell out.
Wow.
And I know that when I was living with Rachel, I would have needed that tenner. It was just like, and I'm not saying that my dad Nan put a thing in my card, but it was just sort of this weird thing of like, all right.
Thanks, Nan.
Thanks, Nan. Thanks, Nan.
It's a real Nan thing to do, though, isn't it? Give you a little tenner.
Oh, my God.
I think that'll cover you for a week in London.
Yeah. I know, but when I told Rachel that Nan had passed away, she went, oh, do you remember when she sent me a fiver in a birthday card?
Oh.
I was like, oh, it's Rachel's birthday. We're all going out at the weekend. And so she's just like, Rachel, I heard it was your birthday. Have a drink on me with a fiver from my Nan.
What a legend.
So cute.
So cute.
So cute. So lovely. So wonderful. So lucky. I was so lucky to have her.
So how did you... So you said you had that bit where you couldn't stop crying. And I guess... Is this your first big grief?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, like my granddad died, and I think that really affected me, but like in a different way, that I was like, everyone's going to die.
Yeah, and you're young.
And so that
and
was
it's
more fear of people dying.
Yeah.
I think my nan would be one of the closest people to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd say so. And I was very upset about my uncle dying, but I was so sad for my auntie and my cousin that was like, for my cousin to lose her dad, who she was enormously close to, and he was just such a good guy.
But for all that to come at once and a breakup.
Yeah, it was like, a difficult time.
It sounds really difficult. Like, how did you, everyone copes very differently, but what was it that sort of dragged you through that process?
I mean, it's so cliche. I wrote a show.
You wrote a show? Of course you did. People listen to the podcast know that what we do is we write shows.
And it's now on iPlay.
Yeah, and it's now on iPlay. That is complete. I think if you're not a performer and you've only just started listening, you might be like, that's weird.
But I think
literally every episode is someone going...
It would potentially help anyone of just like writing.
Yeah, yeah. So you wrote... So when did you start writing it?
The show was already happening because I was writing a show about class and about how I am from a very working class family, but I live in a very middle class life because I'm a comedian in London and... You know, my accent's sort of nowhere really.
Yeah, yeah.
And and I live sort of two worlds, I feel, and I straddle them. And does class really matter? And so I was writing a lot about that. And then all of a sudden, all of that happened and the show changed. And the first gig back was maybe like 4 days after Nan died. And and so I was, also my girlfriend had just moved out and we were engaged. Like it was a bit more of a surprise for me.
Yeah.
And I think that she was more sure than I was at the time. Like now I'm like, oh yeah, it's clearly not a relationship that wasn't working. But for me at the time I was still a bit like, oh God, that's happening. And so I just got on stage and I started doing my material and I went, my girlfriend. I was like, oh no, she's not my girl. She's just broken up with me. Oh, and then, and also this has happened. And then I just sort of had this sort of quite cathartic gig and just sort of bared my soul a little bit, but still managed to be quite funny.
That's the goal, isn't it?
And I came off stage and Daniel Kitson was hosting, who I love as a stand-up and who I don't know that well, but is always very lovely to me. And he came up to me and went, oh, Suze, I'm very sorry about what's happened. But, I mean, give it a few months, you're going to have a cracking show. That is the most comedic response.
Most comedic response. Although I would say amongst female comedians, whenever someone says, oh, you know, he broke up, she broke up, you're like, are you doing Edinburgh next year?
Yeah.
Like, it's just like you instantly think, at least you get show out.
But that made me laugh, Daniel being so honest about it. Because it is that thing with comedy, is that it is a real leveller.
Mm.
Because, you know, talking about, you know, like, I mean, it's the reason that this podcast is so brilliant and such a huge success and people love it so much is because, you know, it is sad, but it does have that element of humour, and that is so linking.
Yeah, connecting. It's so,
like,
isn't it?
I remember texting you quite a lot when Nan died.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I've listened to all of them, but, like, you know, listening to the Mac Twins and Jack Rook and, like, just all the people that you did, like, quite early on in the podcast. I mean, and if you haven't listened to those guys, go back. They're bloody great. Because I travel to gigs by myself all the time, so I'm always in the car. So you're often my company. And it is so reassuring. Like, you know, because especially like listening to people that have lost parents or siblings or, you know, and you know, I always knew that I was going to be okay with Nan. And there is a real comfort in, like, it's the right...
Yeah, it happened at the right time.
And it's, you know, she's the eldest and it's happened in the right order.
Yeah, God, yeah.
You know, and I feel very, very lucky for that. And it is just that thing of, like, listening to other people saying... It was awful and I couldn't breathe. And then slowly I started breathing and I was all right. And I remember a really good friend of mine who's a comic. I remember when the breakup stuff was happening as well. And this is, you know, this sort of, you know, works for grief as well. He said, oh God, I remember there being a time when I thought, I don't know how I'm ever going to not be sad.
Mm.
And he had to move out of the place that he was living in. And he went into the room that was their bedroom and was like, this is it. It's all over. And he was really heartbroken about it. And he said, I don't know how I'm ever going to feel like me again. And then he was like, and then one day I just did.
Yeah.
And that will happen to you as well. And it was all around this time. And I really held on to that, that eventually I was just going to feel like me again. And I think that came back during Edinburgh.
Yeah.
I had, you know, I enjoyed the show and I liked talking about Nan. And I felt like in some way I was saying her on stage was like honouring her somewhere, like she existed.
Yeah.
And
keeping her present. I think that's the other thing.
Yeah.
The other reason performers do shows is if you're talking about them, well, hey, it doesn't take a psychologist to also work out while I do the podcast.
Yeah.
If you're talking about them, they're still here. In some way, they're still here.
I think it's from a play, but it's this idea that you die twice.
Oh, yeah. Once. You die, and then the second time you die when people stop talking about you. Can't remember you, the last person.
Yeah, the last person to say your name.
Yes, yeah.
And so I just sort of loved the idea of going on stage and talk, because the show became partly about my anxiety and that my Nan would be who I would go to.
Because we
didn't have the word anxiety. That wasn't in our vocabulary.
Yeah.
My Nan would say that I suffered with my nerves.
My mum's is a bit of a worrier.
Yeah, a bit of a worrier.
Bit of a worrier.
Yeah. Oh, she's got... Oh, she suffers with her nerves. Something chronic. Oh, honestly, I do feel... Bless her out. And so my nerves were bad because Nan died. And so, of course, I didn't have Nan to talk to. And so it was dealing with that.
Yeah. But it's such a... Like you said, it's so interesting to talk to someone who... happened, inverted commas, in the right way.
Yeah.
Because it's like, yeah, she was... in her 90s.
Yeah.
She had got you through to adulthood.
Yeah.
And so then when you...
To be 32 and lose your Nan.
Yeah.
Like, that's so... My cousin was 50 and she lost her Nan. Like, that's amazing.
It's amazing.
My auntie's two of my aunties are in their 70s. Mum's in her 60s.
Yeah.
Like, to still have your mum around. Like, what a blessing.
And to have someone who... Because you can have people around who you don't get on with. But to have someone that, like, is loved and is part of the family.
Bizarrely, I felt like sort of guilty in a way of, like... chatting to people that had lost parents
stuff. Oh, yeah, the hierarchy of grief, which isn't true, because you're grieving. That's
and just sort of going, well, no, I suppose, you know, we are lucky. But then, like, my mum said to me, like, you know, but, yep, she was old. Yep, I wouldn't want her here as she was. That became the sentence that we said every day.
Yeah.
We wouldn't want her here as she was. She wasn't well.
Right, it wasn't right, yeah.
And those things that you say to reassure yourself. But then mum was like, I know it was her time and I know she was old, but... She was my friend.
Yeah.
She was my best friend.
Yeah.
And I just really miss her.
Hattie said that a lot in her episode, because her mum was elderly, inverted commas.
Yeah, nan-child.
Yeah. And she was saying, you know, it doesn't make it easier. And it's a bit like with heartbreak. Like, you know, when you'll have a friend who's gone out with someone for a month and they break up and they're in pieces.
Yeah.
And then someone else is like 6 years and like, yeah.
Just happened.
It happened. It came to the end of it. So it's time isn't always... It doesn't always make logical sense.
Yeah.
Like, just because someone was in that doesn't mean you're not sad. You haven't lost
that
person.
And I think because Nan stayed in tune with the world.
Yeah.
Like, her favourite programme was Friends.
She just sounds so good.
She was so great.
Who was her favourite character? Was she just like...
Chandler.
Oh, she loved Chandler. What a legend. My favourite.
So, like, you know, she...
But just because he was funny, made her laugh.
And so, like, she... And, like, you know, she loved the film Dirty Dancing. A great movie.
It is... me and your mum would have gotten so well. That's one of my favourite films.
She was great, mate. And she would have loved you. She'd have invited you around. There would have been bread pudding. She'd have made you a cup of tea.
Lovely. And I actually think Dirty Dancing is an extremely progressive feminist movie, and it doesn't get credit for it. So
yeah.
Good on that.
I mean, Penny...
Oh, God, there's so much going on there.
There's a lot happening. There's a lot of stories.
So, you didn't have that sort of slow decline of a grandparent being like, oh, yeah, she's
like,
not
she'd
really...
Become, like, she might repeat herself a little bit.
Yeah.
We'd all heard the stories. But we all sort of loved the stories about, you know, oh, God, yeah, we had to hide in the shop front because of the bombs dropping, and we had to do this. Yeah. And, you know, and heard, you know, all about what everyone did in the war. And, you know, my nan's sister, my Auntie Glad, was, she was like one of the phone girls, you know, putting the different...
Yeah, the operators. Yeah,
but she was on roller skates.
What?
Because they'd have to go all the way over to put it in. So they used to do it on roller skates. And it was like a big thing because it was the naval one.
Oh, my God.
And she had like secret phone calls that she had to do.
That's amazing.
So they were great stories.
Those are great stories.
Yeah.
Why are you not writing the sitcom of Auntie Glad in the
naval
phone operator?
Yeah, I know. I think I will at some point.
Can I? I'll be too old to be Auntie Glad time it gets made, but I'll
You could be
it.
Like the strict woman.
Sure.
That works in there that's like, Gladys, thank you.
Enough, thank you, Gladys.
Yeah.
There you go, that's mine.
Oh, yeah, you've got it. And I'll make sure it's quite a big part, mate. No worries.
Thanks,
I'll be back.
She sounds, that's the thing, I guess, that's important to remember. It doesn't matter... The pain of grief is the pain of someone not being there.
Yes.
And there's different pains. Like, obviously, losing a dad at 15 is different to the pain of losing a nan when
you're 30.
But I understand the pain of someone you want to be there not being there.
Yeah. And do you know what? I think the thing that has been... Not hard. It is hard. Like, but I've had probably my most successful work year ever.
Yeah.
And so my nan only ever knew me as a struggling comic. And I would love to have been able to... Like, when I got the BBC special, I was in Germany with my mum and my auntie. Because we had to start doing new traditions. So we go, the three of us go away. So they'd always wanted to go to Christmas markets.
Oh,
so I organised us to all go to some Christmas markets. Have some biscuits, have some vodkas, have a laugh.
Yeah.
And while I was out there, my agent rang me and was like, you've got life from the BBC. And mum, everyone was like, let's have a drink. So we all immediately went out and had a drink, and mum just went, oh, I wish I could bring Nan.
Yeah.
And so I think that thing of,
But then I think it's really interesting because it's very common.
Yeah.
It's very common for a big grief to happen and then life to go vroom.
Yeah.
And it's not like, oh, good they died or...
No.
It's just like sometimes it's a bit like having a baby.
It's just a new focus
Something in your brain changes that maybe needed to change and wasn't. Like you said, you couldn't see that relationship wasn't working, but it wasn't.
Yeah.
And you couldn't see perhaps what that show needed. It was this.
Yeah.
And suddenly it makes you go vroom and you're like, oh, okay, I kind of know what to do because all the distractions are gone. I know what matters.
Like, I still have anxiety I've got anxiety.
It doesn't walk away, sadly.
Yeah. But I would say that I don't sweat the small stuff as much.
Yeah, which is great.
Which I think is, I do, I still worry about things like that happened 10 years ago when I embarrassed myself or when I said the wrong thing to someone or about sort of, you know, human rights across the globe and like stuff like that. But like I've stopped worrying about work because I'm like, it'll happen.
Yeah.
Hopefully I'll be funny enough. A group of people will like me enough so that I can carry on doing this for a bit.
We've talked about a lot on the show, like this fearlessness you get after someone has died.
Yeah.
And it's a really nice place to be in a weird way.
Yeah.
Even though you're going through this pain. And it's the same, you know, when you see someone who's had that incredible heartbreak and suddenly they look the best they've ever looked.
Yeah, and you're like, oh.
Like everyone's all over them because they don't care.
Don't give a shit,
And like as humans, we're like, what is it you know that we don't? And it's like, yeah, I know that we're going to die.
Yeah.
And so I know that there's no point worrying about what's happening in this bar right now or who's the right person to talk to right now. Like,
that's exactly right.
Like, and it's, I think
I'm a bit of a control freak and I've had to just stop.
Yeah.
Because what can you do?
Yeah.
And that must happen with a baby as well, that you're just like.
Yeah, actually, massively. And I, again, suffer from anxiety, massive control issues. And death and birth force you to be like, you can't do anything. But, you know, you live this bubble of like, no, but if I touch all the corners and I do this thing. And then I think when it's so in your face, you're like, oh, yeah, I can't. And it's, you can't argue with it anymore. Like, you know, beforehand, you can twist and turn and be like, no, there's something.
When there's just this little human going, I need you to do me. Yeah. You're like,
Or like, she's gone.
Yeah, so just that's it. Yeah.
You can't hide from that fact.
No, and I think that's, and I think that, you know, the way that I want to think about it, the way that I choose to feel about it, I guess, is I think that I was very lucky that I had a lovely nan. And that I, and she got to see me grow up, and she got to see me find out what I wanted to do with my life and be myself.
Yeah.
And I got to say goodbye to her.
God, there's so
and
much.
And she had a very dignified death. Oh, and I mean, so I said goodbye to her, all very emotional, drove back to London. Then when she actually died, so my auntie and my mum had been there continuously because they were so worried about her dying by herself.
Yeah.
Continuously. And I think people have said this on the show before. And then they both wanted, they were like, oh, let's go and have a shower. Because Nan had like one of those sit-down showers, old lady shower. And, or old man, that's a quality. And so my auntie's sister-in-law, who's like a really good friend of the family, Frankie, she's, I don't think she's a palliative care nurse, but she spends a lot of time with people that are very elderly. And my auntie rang her and said, let me in, Anne, I'm exhausted. We just want to go and have a shower and have something to eat. Would you come and sit with Mum? And Frankie said, oh, yeah, yeah, because she'd already offered a bunch of times, but they hadn't taken her up. And they're like, oh, yeah. So Frankie just drove over to my nan's flat and, oh, yeah, 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 go and have a couple of hours. Go and have something to eat, have a shower, and then come back. You know, I'll stay with her as long as until you're back. So they left. And she said that she put her hand on my nan's hand and went, she's gone, Joan, you can go. They've gone, Joan, you can go. And she said that she thinks by the time they'd gone down, she said her pulse slowed immediately from the front door was shut.
Oh, my God.
And by the time they'd got in the lift and got downstairs to get in their car, she was gone.
See, I so many people have said that story. And often the living people are like, oh, I wasn't there. And I'm like, they didn't want you there.
No.
They didn't want you there.
And like she knew Frankie, and she knew that Frankie deals with people that are dead all the time.
Exactly.
Whereas my mum would have been like, she's dead, what do we do now?
And it gives them Frankie, a chance to breathe and then come back into the room.
Yeah, Frankie just immediately rang the coroner and knew exactly what to do and was like, okay, well, we need to move the body and we need to, you know, lots of things happen to a body. And so, and that was it.
What?
She even had...
Even that! I was like, she was like, don't worry, I'm on it. I'm on it, babes. Got it sorted.
Yeah, and she hadn't spoken for like 24 hours by this point. She was just very... And she kept doing the...
Oh, God, yeah.
And then nothing.
There they go. No, they still hurt.
The rat or whatever they call it. And then that was it. Frankie just sort of said to her, no, Jane, they've gone. You can go now. Just go.
God, I mean, that is... And I feel bad for the living because I understand that, like, oh, I wasn't there. But now I've had a kid, I understand not wanting a kid to be in pain.
Yeah,
because when totally. before when I didn't have children, I just thought, oh, why wouldn't you I want to be in the room.
Yeah,
you should be here for me. But now you think, no, you just want to. You're always thinking about protecting them.
Yeah,
and if they don't have to see it, it's happening.
Yeah,
so that means that when they come back in the room, she's dead. It's happened, and now that's a different thing they're dealing with rather than watching any pain or
totally.
Any last minute struggles or anything like
that. Yeah,
God,
do you believe in sort of ghosts and stuff? Do you believe in any?
It's
you're
so
not sure.
Hard. I'm not sure.
Spooky things ever happen to you?
They have, but like again, it's really hard. Like Nero when he died, there was more spooky stuff, and then obviously it's been a long time.
Yeah,
so spooky
when he was still in the wardrobe.
Nathan's
like this. For anyone that has
not regular listeners,
episodes.
You don't know what that means. Listen in, catch on about it. But yeah, like I was talking about this the other day actually to my mum. Some stuff's happened. I don't know if I've said this before. He worked from home and my mum and dad's bedroom, they had like a small, tiny room next to it, which was his office. And he would work all night, like all the constant, self-employed man, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, my dad's the same.
We
always
know.
Working.
So about the week after he died, I'd moved into my mum's bed and I'd moved it, like I just turned up and that was it. I stayed there for about 6 months. And we both woke up and heard the computer going, like the tapping, tap, 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 tap. And she went, oh, he's working. And then we both went back to sleep. And in the morning we were like, what? What? Like, we both heard it. And my mum says, yeah, he was definitely, he was trying to finish some stuff off. But then nothing like that has happened for a very long time.
Yeah.
So it's not like I believe in ghosts, but I definitely believe that if you have a very strong energy and you die quite young as well, or your personality, or, you know, not even strong, just like, I don't know, like feel like some people still have shit to do.
Yeah.
Sometimes people are done. They sort everything out.
Yeah.
Or they want to just tell someone something, like, or, you know.
Yeah.
I feel like that seems like energy, you know, that's a physical fact. Energy doesn't die. It just changes into other things.
Yeah. Because I would say that generally I'm a skeptic.
Yeah, I'm a bit, yeah.
But I had a sort of a weird moment only maybe like 3-4 months ago. Well, I was in bed, asleep. My girlfriend was staying over. She was asleep as well. And I was having this dream. So I know it was the same before anyone's like, it was a dream. So I was having this, the listeners to this podcast aren't those people.
Yeah, don't worry.
So I was having this dream where I was trying to get to Nan. And she was in Commercial Road, which is a big shopping road in Portsmouth. She was with her two sisters. And I was like, Nan, Auntie Glad, Auntie Bet. They couldn't hear me. And I kept trying to get to them. And I was being held back.
Wow.
And but they were like, you know, 10 feet ahead of me, 20 feet ahead of me. So I was wriggling in my sleep. And then, you know, you have that moment between sleep and awake.
Yeah.
I heard my Nan's voice and it sounded like it was in my room saying, we've got to go, we've scared her.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And then I just like woke up right and I was like, are you here? And then nothing.
Wow. That's a good one.
I was like,
oh my God.
Do you know what? I've always been scared of ghosts. And I've been left, because I stay in like I've just been back from tour in Australia and I was staying in like some weird ass motels.
Yeah.
And I've always been really scared of murderers, ghosts, murdering ghosts.
Sure.
All three.
Totally with you.
Yeah. And all of a sudden I was like, there is one. Nana probably sort of has one. Nan,
of course she will.
Keep an eye on.
I've had this similar thing that I was on my own in the house once. It can't have been that long after he died. And something, I can't remember what happened, but I remember saying, look, if it's you, it's scary, so it needs to stop. And it stopped. And then I remember thinking, I'm too much of a scaredy cat.
Yeah.
So, like, I can't deal with it.
Yeah, totally. I remember saying to Nan when Grampy died, I was like, I feel like someone's in my room.
Yeah.
I feel like there's always someone in my room. And I had this really big wardrobe that all my toys were in. It wasn't a wardrobe, it was a cupboard.
Oh, yeah.
And all my toys were in there. And my dad used to always put this scary mask in there as a joke.
Not funny.
He was
scared for you.
Absolutely awful. Oh, my dad owned a fancy dress shop when I was a kid.
I'm scared already.
So it was like a fancy dress head of a drunk man.
Oh, God.
It was awful. But very fun fancy dress shop. So I was like always scared of everything you could think of I was scared of. And I said to Nan once, I was like, oh, I really feel like I'm being watched in my room. I hate sleeping in there. Like, we keep getting it when I was... keep going up in the night and getting in with mum and dad being like, there's someone in my room, someone in my room. None of that. It's just cramps. That's not in my room. I'm not making it better.
It's still scary. But I think that's really good what you said, because you're all right now. Nana's watching.
Nan's watching.
Nan's
going
to sort it out. Oh, Susie, she sounds like an absolute... I'm not going to swear because she wouldn't like it. An absolute legend.
She really was. And it's nice to be able to, you know, keep her alive by talking about her. So thanks for having me.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
To Nana Joan.
Nan Joan. Nanny Wells.
Nanny Wells.
You can follow Susie on Twitter at Susie Ruffle or listen to her podcast Like Minded Friends with Tom Allen. And she's going to Edinburgh this year with her new show Nocturnal, which you can see every day at the Pleasance Courtyard at 9:45. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Griefcast or email us thegriefcast@gmail.com. Music was provided by the Glue Ensemble and the show was edited by Kate Holland with thanks to Whistledown Studios. And remember, you are not alone, and stay cool.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.